behavior change. Changing diabetes and hypertension screening among African Americans.
So there's like 33 people in here, which is really way better than I expected for to be the last speaker on the last day. And I've got two colleagues in other rooms who are doing the same thing, so I thought, I'm going to go back and say, well, there were 33 in my session. We'll see. I also kept wanting to say, fourth floor, cholecystectomy. Doing that. That was very interesting. Now, I've got something that's a little bit different from this because mine is technology, but it's radio-based, so it's not internet. And I'm not sure why I ended up in this group, but that's fine. It'll be different. It's technology, right, yeah. And so what do I do here? Just okay, thanks. Okay, so what I'm going to be talking about is a radio serial drama or soap opera called Body Love. And I have, I just brought for display the packaging over there of the CDs. It's a radio serial drama. Am I like going in and out with this thing? Is that okay? Okay, good. It's a radio serial drama that is designed to model behavior so that listeners can learn the good and bad consequences of healthy and unhealthy behaviors, and it's also designed because of that to increase people's self-efficacy to change. The characters struggle to with these different risk factors that we all struggle with, and the episodes, and I have it over here too, so I have to keep looking. They show the negative consequences, etc. So, thank you. So we've been struggling with how to evaluate the influence of this and the impact of this, and I think it's sort of typical of trying to evaluate mass media programs in general. There's just, it's a very difficult thing to do. But this particular way of looking at it was this research question, which is the level of listening to Body Love related to two things? One is self-report of influence of the show on behavior, and I'll talk about that in a minute, and then self-report of specific behaviors. Okay, so here's our methods. We have 80 weekly episodes of the program, and they were aired in about 15 radio stations across Alabama over this time period. Before the first shows were broadcast, we recruited a panel of people who listened to the particular radio stations that we would be on. And then we surveyed them at baseline, and then every 20 episodes, which is approximately 5 months, okay? So we ended up having a baseline and then four follow-up waves every 20 episodes. And so we took the data and we categorized the people who responded into non-listeners. We had people, because we recruited them before the show was ever on, who were listeners to the radio station but never listened to the actual show. Then we had seldom listeners. We just grouped them in frequent listeners. Okay, so we measured, we categorized the non-listeners, seldom listeners, and frequent listeners like this. Obviously, the non-listeners said they never heard the show. Seldom listeners were those who reported having heard the show, say, from 1 to 20 times. And remember, there were 80 episodes altogether. And then frequent listeners reported listening either almost every week or definitely every week. Okay. Then our two dependent variables were amount of discussion about certain health topics, and that's what I'm calling the behavioral variable, and I'll explain that in a minute, and amount of influence. The amount of discussion was measured by asking people, how often do you discuss these health problems with family and friends? And it was a scale from, you know, never to very often. And there were a number of health problems, but diabetes and hypertension were the main two that we were trying to address at that time. And then the other measure was this measure that we're sort of now developing. It's not behavior, but it's not intention either. It's something else that seems to represent an outcome that is worth exploring further, and it was the amount of influence. So how much has body love influenced you to, and then there's these different behaviors, and they rate it on a scale of from it's zero influence to 100% influence. Now, that doesn't mean they actually change their behavior, but it's their perception of whether the show is influencing them. Okay, so we had four follow-up waves, and this is what we saw when we looked at it. The frequent listeners compared to the seldom listeners differed the most, mostly in wave two, after the first 20 episodes. And at that point, frequent listeners were more likely than seldom listeners to say that the show influenced them to discuss diabetes, influenced them to get screened for diabetes, influenced them to get screened for hypertension, to start physical activity, and to eat a healthier diet. And here's the numbers. I hope you can see them. Those slides look kind of murky, don't they? So now on these questions, on these items, we don't have either baseline or non-listeners, because the questions wouldn't make sense if they'd never heard the show. Okay. So you can see here that this is the mean percent of influence. And In wave two, all the way down, there was a statistically significant difference between seldom listeners and frequent listeners. But that didn't really hold up over time. There's a couple on talking about diabetes, which was the main emphasis of our show in later waves. But it didn't really, it was, you know, the impact was greatest in wave two. Now, these are, this is the measure, how often do you talk to family and friends about these issues? And here we can have baseline, and we can have non-listeners included in the analysis. Now, the baseline, of course, includes everybody, because they weren't listeners of the show yet. And this is the percent responding either often or very often that they talk about these things. Here we didn't see much in terms of statistically significant differences, but if you compare some of these responses to baseline, which we didn't do a statistical analysis on, you can see that there does seem to be some increase from baseline. I think the only statistically significant one was at wave three, they talked about hypertension. So. God, did I forget to introduce Julie? Julie, I'm sorry. I was nervous. Julie Suzuki Crumley is the co-author on this, and she's over there. And I've thought of her now because this was her great idea. As we were talking about, you know, the data, she said, well, it would be interesting to see if the content changed over time of the show in relation to these behavior changes as well. So that's what we did, and Julie did a content analysis of all 80 episodes, not herself, but she designed it, and we wanted to look to see if spikes in the content about a particular issue sort of match spikes in their self-reports. And here is what we see. I guess the most interesting thing to me about this, as the person who kind of developed the show, was how much the diabetes content went down after the first 20 episodes. And anecdotally, I can tell you that since we had never done anything like this before, we started out, you know, with the programs being very, very preachy. And as we got into the soap opera part of it, you know, we got more into plots and relationships and things like that. And also based on some of the writing in the field of entertainment education, we became less preachy, and we just, you know, wove it in a little more. So diabetes, as you can see, the content went down, and there's really no pattern there that I could discern anyway, except that frequent listeners did discuss diabetes more. And the next slide shows pretty much the same thing. This was to get screened for diabetes. So it doesn't have anything remarkable. And the next, but this one is interesting. This is to get screened for hypertension. And given that these things were sort of on two different scales, it's not so much the distance as the pattern that I was interested in. And the frequent listening pattern is kind of like the content pattern. So the first wave had the most about hypertension, and then it dropped off significantly in the second wave, but then kind of came back up in the third wave. So this is, you know, very not very scientific, but just a visual way of looking at it right now. Lots of limitations. Our measure of content was pretty crude. It was basically just counting how many times something was mentioned. We intended to do it, and actually we did it in a more, like, not just number of times, but sort of how deep into the content they got, but we couldn't use that in this analysis. And, of course, our data weren't scaled to make that kind of comparison. The self-reports of some behaviors, since they're reporting this every 5 months, things do become less reliable over time. It's just sort of this fatigue with saying, yeah, I talk about diabetes to my friends and family. You can't have a true baseline measure on some of these things, like level of listening. And we had a lot of attrition in waves 3 through 5. Okay. Oh, yeah, and I just wanted to mention about why we didn't have, like, actual behaviors like exercise, physical activity, diet, and so forth. We did. You don't see them here because what happened was there was sort of a ceiling effect that everybody self-reported high at the beginning, and they just continued to self-report high all the way throughout. So these listeners, you know, it's hard to measure those things without a lot of questions, and they just always said, yeah, I do these things. So conclusions are, if frequent listeners change more than seldom listeners or non-listeners, then we feel like the change is more attributable to the program. And we saw that really mostly in wave 2, or the first follow-up. And that's what the next bullet says. And our later episodes tend to have less education. But, you know, other spikes in the content didn't appear to be related to spikes in behavior change. And I also forgot to put an acknowledgement slide for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which funded a lot of this work. So I want to mention that right now. And I think my last slide is just that disclosure slide. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you. This has been fascinating. Questions? Yes.
Did the radio drama series mention diet, but did it speak strictly in terms of combating hypertension? Did they discuss things like sweet tea or
yes. Yes, in fact, we have one very memorable scene that we call the naked chicken scene, where the teenage son, the mother and older daughter are trying to cook some chicken without the skin and in a healthy way, and he says, I'm not eating naked chicken. In fact, the food stuff was some of the easier stuff to work into dialogue, because we talk about food all the time.
Presentation. Yeah. It was done bilingually. You know, people were asked questions based on their language skills. So we had interviewers who could speak both English and, you know, Hispanic. Like, you know, what happened is this is a part of another survey that was going on, and that was directed towards Hispanic population. So we included some questions that are related to telemedicine, and we included that. So that was so we were able to get access to about 2,400, but at the same time we couldn't ask them a lot of other questions, you know, because it was a part of the screening questions. So that's why, you know, we wanted to ask more, but at least it gave us the very basics basic informations. But absolutely, it encouraged us to do more and more questions and more surveys based on their preferences. Thanks.
Yeah, we conducted the survey actually in English and Spanish, and we have a professional translator, and it's been approved by the Institutional Review Board, and it's available. I would be happy for anybody if you are interested to replicate the study in your county or in your area. I would be very happy to share the instrument with you guys. Yes. Definitely, definitely, no doubt. The library, the librarian should be like, you know, a major. Exactly. Actually, I presented two other posters from the same study, looking at the variation by insurance status and looking at the racial ethnic distribution variation. And during my presentations, actually, some people stopped by and they suggested me to communicate with the National Library of Medicine folks and start building relationship with them. I did, actually. And the BI of the project, I'm the co-investigator. The BI of the project happened to be here at the same time, and we started talking. So probably we're going to talk to the funding, the previous funding agencies, and the National Library of Medicine, and also the clinics. They have other sources of funding, and they are very, very interested to collaborate with us to build this intervention after we shared with them all the presentations and the findings.
If somebody would give me enough money to do that, I would be happy to do that. One of the reasons radio is so great is because, relatively speaking, it's inexpensive. It was all of the above, and that's another thing about the first 20 episodes. We got some. We wrote these in classes, in actual public health and theater department student groups, and so every semester we'd have a new group of writers, and maybe about the fourth or fifth semester, some new students would come in and they'd be like, God, you know. Everybody's got nothing but health problems in these, you know, it's all about being sick and dying and all that. And it was like, well, we had to do that so we could show people how to get better. You know, we had to make them sick. But we did, you know, because then one person who, you know, actually went into a diabetic coma and had to have a kidney transplant and all that, she, you know, all the people around her in the show were also learning how to prevent it themselves. So it was pretty easy to do that.
A great question. We actually piloted the Worlds with a similar sample at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and we saw the same results. So this was a replication. So even among fairly highly educated people, they're not learning as well as we had expected from active learning. And what we're trying to sort out now is whether it's something about our specific active learning worlds, where there were distracting features in the worlds that took away from the what we meant to be the educational content. We had another world that was similar to the active learning elevator world, but had even more distracting features, and we saw even worse learning there. And so what we're trying to tease apart is a little bit how to make it a game and seem fun, but not introduce so many features that you distract from learning. And so this is definitely a line of research that's in progress, but it's a great question. That's another great, a lot of what virtual reality has been used for in the context of science education is actually for younger kids, so middle school, teaching abstract scientific concepts. So it's been used for things like field of force and mass and trying to tease apart some physics concepts. So people have tried to use it for fairly unfamiliar and abstract concepts. But no one's tried to use it before for genetics with somewhat older adults. And it definitely could be that, although I don't think a 40 is particularly old, that it works better for younger people, that it is more effective with a middle school population who's more used to games. So I think there are a lot of questions that have been generated by our results, but definitely context and genetics is one of them.
I had a question for Dr. Weaver. I just was, when you were talking about the medical sites, and then you mentioned the patient sites, what was the proportion of, you know, like say the NGO sites to the patient sites?
We didn't actually measure that in the study.
Oh, okay.
We measured instead the idea that folks were relying on other people.
Oh, okay.
In the internet community for health information.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Target specific patient related sites.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? We've like basically timed it perfectly then. Thank you all, and I'm sure you agree this is a great panel.
That was so good.
Thank you. This was fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do now.
Yeah, the doctor told me.